Hi everybody, today is Wednesday, April 2nd, 2025, and our friend Andrei Martyanov is back with us. Welcome back, Andrei.
My pleasure.
Andrei, let's get started with the conflict in the Middle East between Iran and the United States.
Okay.
It's so confusing the way that Donald Trump is dealing with both Iran and Russia. 3 days ago, we've learned that Donald Trump was commenting on both Iran and Russia, that he's going to put more tariffs on both countries, and he's going to bomb Iran as well. Yesterday, it was confirmed by Israeli media, Channel 14, that they're going to bomb Iran the way that they have never seen since World War II. And today, we've learned that Donald Trump is talking, he's considering indirect talks with Iran. It's a huge kind of circus. Like, if they, I don't know what's going on in the mind of the administration. Are they trying to intimidate Iran? Are they trying to force them into negotiations? After all, it doesn't seem that Iran would accept the way that Donald Trump is putting pressure on them. How do you see the way that he's dealing with Iran?
Classic Trump. He doesn't know what he's going to do next minute. So he's a narcissist and he's a hot air balloon. And he needs to constantly produce this type of the verbal activity. In some sense, it's psychological. He's not stupid. He's not as unaware as Biden was. Biden was a walking corpse, basically. And he knows the problem. He knows the problems of the United States. And I think that from this point of view, considering how the United States really declines, and especially militarily, he needs to constantly produce this kind of, you know, verbal activity to cover up things which are happening, you know, despite whatever he says or anybody in Washington says, because there are some, you know, fundamental laws, so to speak, of geopolitics and economics, which are at work here, and they cannot be changed. And Israelis, who obviously have a massive influence on the Capitol Hill, they control pretty much Congress. Netanyahu is also probably not without the, justification, says that he can control Trump. Yeah, Trump is Zionist. So in this sense, the fact that this Channel 14, whatever, says that, oh yeah, we have data that they will bomb Iran, what's new? This talk was around for like, what, 20 years? So, and this is all AIPAC-driven hysteria. And it's obviously Israel first. Well, pretty much most American politicians are Israeli firsters. United States comes, you know, remote second in that case. And so
right now it's Israel, then Donald Trump, and the third.
United States is secondary considerations for them because they all subsistence exist on their, you know, media promotion by the AIPAC, by Israeli lobby, and they are all corrupt. So, and but the point is that before you even bomb Iran, whatever that means, okay, it has to be understood. The United States is incapable of taking out all Iranian sites, no matter what they do. I understand Scott Ritter, he kind of developed this idea from the point of view of Trump administration that, oh yeah, Trump will go in and do the nuclear thing. Well, it's not going to end well either way, but the response could be really devastating for the United States forces in the Middle East. And that's the strategic and operational contingency they have to consider. And again, you correctly stated, it's a circus. It is one day this thing, then the other day the other. It's a bipolar, you know, mental issue with the United States right now. And Trump is, you know, just kind of the epitome of that all. So tomorrow, maybe he will change his mind again. I don't know. So.
We know, Andre, the way that they're talking about Diego Garcia base is capable of supporting sort of attack on Iran, because we've learned right after this new announcement, bombing announcement on the part of Trump, Saudi Arabia, UAE, Bahrain, were all they send message to Iran that they're not going to be part of this. Don't consider them to be part of this.
Yeah.
And do you think that the United States, without the Arab states, because the main, you know, Qatar said the same thing, and if they don't use those bases and they're just using the Diego Garcia base, are they capable of just fighting Iran? Because it's a country against a little island, a little...
Well, yeah, Diego Garcia is essentially, yeah, they launched their strategic air. It's B-1B Lancers and B-52s. B-1B Lancers, they are capable, I believe, to carrying out the JASSM strikes. And that's the only thing they have. The result will be pretty much predictable. No matter how they, unless they use indeed nuclear weapons, which I don't think so they will. And they will, Iranians will attack American bases no matter what you do. And Qatar may say whatever it wants, but they have the one largest American base in the Middle East, which is right across the, you know, Persian Gulf, you know, so Strait of Hormuz. So it's not a long flight time there, you know, and so it's going to be a horrendous mess. We cannot even, you know, just comprehend yet what it may result in. Obviously, we'll have the issue of the oil, but then, of course, we have to keep in mind that Iranians have diaspora all over the world, and American interests will be attacked. Including, yeah, using the terrorism as, you know, as the tool, sadly. But there are many American interests in the Middle East. And, of course, Israel will get it. Make no mistake. Israel will get it big time.
The situation with Russia, Andrei, it seems that as time goes by, it's getting much more complicated. Today, Kremlin criticized the U.S. silence on Ukrainian strikes against Russian energy infrastructure. The United States is providing Ukraine with intelligence, with weapons. It's not all about that. The ceasefire that they're talking about, the proposal on the part of the United States, is not working. They're not even putting pressure on Ukraine, as we know. We don't know what's going on, but what's the outcome? Who cares about what the United States is doing? There is no outcome of what they're doing.
Yeah, and we have to be now very clear, because it's officially have been confirmed by New York Times that the United States is in the full combat command and control of the Ukrainian armed forces. And fact is, those Ukrainian armed forces are essentially, as New York Times itself admitted in 2023, as a matter of fact, has been created in the image of the U.S. Army and NATO forces. So it's not like United States is somehow is incapable. How United States can put pressure on itself? That's what it is, you know. Russians know that. Russians knew this all along. Now they are in the mode, it's a very American thing. They lost the war and lost it by the, oh my gosh, it's horrendous losses. And American generals have been paraded as basically incompetent people, which they are, most of them anyway. And so they have to find now the way to off-ramp, to save the face. How can you save the face in this case? They try to apply all pressure on Russia. Russians don't care. You know, Russians just do the thing. And even the so-called ceasefire, the bomb, which has been thrown to Trump, Russians will wait until 17th of April when it expires. And then they will resume the finishing off whatever is left of their energy infrastructure in Ukraine, while still continuing as we speak, killing on average about between 14 to 1500 a day of the armed forces of Ukraine and their advisors. And as the result, we have this situation. And I don't know what Trump thinks, but I mean, he's making this war really fast his own war. And once it completes this process, his administration will be screwed. he will lose his presidency, because the United States military is in not in the same league as the Russian army. And so they, whatever they will try, and especially operation, they are not good they in terms of planning operations. So, and obviously the United States doesn't have industrial capacity, neither does Europe, to support Ukraine. Russia said, you know what, send whatever you want. We'll kill it, we'll destroy it, you know. So if they won't continue on this path, it's going to be, well, they're making it more and more complicated for the United States. We're not talking about the Europe. Europe is a completely different story. It's so pathetic, and to see this asylum, basically, that's what it becomes. And what's the outcome? The outcome is clear. Russians are very clear. Either you remove root causes, or we will achieve all political objectives of the demilitarization and the denazification of whatever is left of Ukraine. If it will require the wiping out the Ukrainian statehood, this will happen too.
Andrei, you mentioned the article in the New York Times. It was a very extensive article. It pointed out many things that... But it, what was so amazing about the article that they're just putting the blame on Zelensky and his generals.
Oh, yeah.
They're saying that that's why Russia is winning. That's why Ukraine is losing. It wasn't because of us.
It's not the United States. No, no, we were good. Look at us. We are so awesome. We win all our wars. That's the whole thrust of this article. Obviously, with the attempt to assign their war crime by the Biden regime to Trump. But Trump is obviously is happy to take it on, you know. So instead of separating himself and stopping any kind of support, they continue. They will be killed. All of them will be killed. They can do nothing about it. It's out of their league. Pentagon is not in the same league. They are good primarily, and even that they are not good at. Well, their level is, well, let's face it, you know, it's to fight Grenadas and Panama. So that's pretty much it. Now, they have been shown a little bit, glimpse into the, not even war, still special military operation. And they don't like it, but nothing they can do about it. So they are absolutely rudderless. They absolutely have no understanding how to get the hell out of this situation. And they already lost the face. And now when the New York article confirmed that Russians knew all along that it is a U.S. Army essentially fighting there, you know, our NATO forces fighting there under full command and control. So there you go. You have to have record, you know, like you have to be called, you know, a great general or great military leader like Zhukov, you know, or Kosovsky, you know, or Gerasimov for that matter. You have to show the record. American generals show the record of losing wars all the time. They're not good, not just strategically. They are not good operationally, but it is their American tradition to, when it comes down to it, just to give you an example, a former National Security Advisor of Trump, General H.R. McMaster, who wrote, you know, this dereliction of duty. He was replaying still, you know, the Vietnam War, assigning, you know, their blame left and right on the politicians. All these excuses. This time, it's again excuses. We're so good, but these are Ukrainians which lost the war. Okay. Sure, 1.2 million of them more are killed, 2 million are maimed. The nation is wonderful leadership of the Pentagon. So I don't know what they teach them. Well, I know actually what they teach them in military academies and all those general staff and, you know, colleges, but they're not that good. They think that they're very good, but they're not.
It seems to me that the Trump administration and the way they're playing the game, they're somehow showing the Russians that they're trying to do their best, but there is a lot of pressure in the United States on them. But that doesn't make sense on the other hand, because there is a lot of pressure on Putin. There are many people who believe that they can decide on the battlefield the result of the conflict, but he decided to talk with the United States. These forces exist in many countries. We have different voices in Russia, in the United States, but the management of the government is important. And the final word, which comes from the president of the United States, is important for Russia. That doesn't make sense anymore. They're just playing.
Russians are not idiots. They know that it's all worthless. But as I use this phrase, including in Russian, that Russian diplomacy is really good at pulling their tomcats gonads, you know, the balls. And they will play this game whatever they want, you know, considering the fact that essentially diplomacy as a craft essentially non-existent anymore in the United States. There are diplomats, but they're not real diplomats. They are, who knows what they are, you know, they are ideologues, propagandists, you know. And so Russians know that whatever Trump says, you still cannot trust it, you know. And they go on with, look at the actions. Nothing changed in the special military operation. It proceeds every day as it was before. So Russians will wait out this, the energy ceasefire, which, by the way, Ukraine already, which is essentially United States and NATO allies, if you wish, already basically violated it, because that's what they do. They lie. And then she will resume. And yeah, no, everything is decided on the battlefield. And we know the score.
The main problem, in your opinion, when it comes to the United, you're living in the United States, do you think the main problem that Donald Trump is so far has shown that he's incapable of solving the situation, the problem in Ukraine, is within the administration or somehow the forces outside of the administration that forcing them into somehow in some sort of chaos?
Both, absolutely. First, donor class, the class of donors, and we already know the AIPAC, you know, all kinds of other lobbies. And then, if you take a look at exceptions such as Tulsi Gabbard, for example, she is a sensible woman. She's a smart woman. Or Kash Patel, who is the FBI, you know, some other people. Trump's still surrounded by neocons and warmongers. Look at his national security advisor, Waltz. My gosh, the guy wouldn't understand the first thing, despite the fact that, I've been there, you know, special operation and things like that. I mean, they all come from the humiliating, losing backgrounds. They're not coming from the military culture, which can come out and say, look at our victories here and there and there. They don't have those. They always have only excuses, and they say, we were so good. But somebody betrayed us. It's a very popular American motif, you know. It's like we were almost winning, you know, and then somebody in Washington, D.C. betrayed us. No, this is not how it works. It's the whole system. Systems fight wars. Systems conduct geopolitics. And Trump, in this respect, look at, again, Waltz is a neocon, you know. So you have Pete Hegseth. He has the lucid moments. He says some sensible things. But again, look at this now. The guys want to concentrate on China. Obviously, the situation with Russia is such that they cannot do this easily. But they have now also Middle East. It's like, dude, United States is still superpower, but it's not that super, you know, to even handle one war, let alone what they're trying to do. So the American war is primarily bombing from the same distance. United States is incapable to conduct the continental warfare on the massive scale, first, because there will be massive casualties, which will make Vietnam look like a stroll in the park. And United States is, absolutely in panic about that. So the only thing is just, the bomb thing, you know, whatever they will try to bomb. But reality is, all this culture and this aggressive culture, all this desire to, you know, somehow realize themselves as the best, you know, as Obama said, finest fighting force in history. Oh my gosh, there were many people spinning in their graves after this statement, and they were not Americans. But the point is that, yeah, they have this impulse, the pugnacious instinct, and this either must end or they will kill the country. The United States is not designed to stand in the geopolitical contest in the 21st century. It's simply not that type of the country anymore. And plus, combined West is, I wouldn't say that it is split or broken, but it's not as coherent or cohesive as it used to be during the Cold War 1.0. And again, you cannot create your own military history by inventing it, you know? And especially when you do not have properly developed field of the military sciences. And what we have today is, yeah, this chickens coming home to roost. And as I already stated many times before, even before Trump was elected, if he is elected, he's now elected, he's a POTUS now. I mean, his time is really running out. It will be his war, and it will, you know what, will do his administration in. He's going to lose his presidency. Not necessarily he will be impeached, but he is going to lose his presidency. It's going to be the presidency of this chaotic, self-contradictory statements, lack of any serious policies. And the only thing they, him shaking hands, you know, shaking those fists, you know, saying, we'll bomb you. He cannot bomb Russia. He knows that. So what's left? Maybe Iran. But even that is questionable.
We know that, as he mentioned, he seems a little bit concerned about nuclear weapons, arms control, and all of that. He mentioned that in his interviews. But the way that the United States is behaving is totally against the way that Donald Trump is talking about arms control. And you see the situation with Iran. For the first time, we had one of the officials, Ali Larijani, and everybody knows him. He's an advisor to the supreme leader of Iran. He said, if Iran is attacked, we're going to build nuclear bombs.
Yeah. It's a natural response. That's the natural response. Yeah.
You're trying to do something with Russia while you're just letting Ukraine whatever they want to do. Just, I don't know, attacks. And
no, you cannot. United States is not agreement capable. So this tradition continues. With Trump, as I already stated, the guy is a, come on, each day it's a new statement which contradicts the previous one. And they are absolutely lost in this world. And the reason they are lost, if you look at this system, and obviously we have the political system, system of the governance, okay, which operates as some kind of organism. Their organism is ill. It's sick. It doesn't produce proper liquids, proper hormones, and all things of this nature, which sustain you and make you, your life, well, to continue, let alone enjoy it. And America is sick, is ill in this respect. And because, as I already stated, chickens are coming home to roost. For example, take the social media. Suddenly, you cannot hide war crimes. Many archives are being opened, you know, and people begin to ask questions. Those people who really matter, who are people with the brains, and there are many people in the United States who are, unlike many Europeans, they still think, you know, they might not be necessarily, you know, they're very articulate or, you know, some have a very strong political positions, but they read things, especially alternative media, as Tucker Carlson, Candace Owens, you know, just look at this, Judge Knapp, you know, they have enormous audiences. They command the attention of many people. And they begin to ask the question, how the hell did it happen? Americans are not necessarily aggressive people, except for some, you know, fanatics, especially Christian Zionists and, you know, that type of people and so-called conservatives. But in reality, they're rhinos. So, and they ask the question, how the hell did it happen? How did we find ourselves in this position? And if you begin to tell them that, actually, dudes, it's not just the economic system, which is essentially financialization of the American economy. These are wars for which United States never was designed to fight. It's not continental power in traditional understanding. It never was shaped as the continental power through the continental warfare. And so you have those guys who lost all their wars, but they still continue to come in and say that, oh, yeah, we know how to fight it. No, you don't. Your military education is not even designed for that. And so as the result, we have this, you know, discrepancies and this, it's a serious, historically significant factor in the essentially what is happening with the United States is with its decline geopolitically, economically. People say that, oh, yeah, he imposes the tariffs. Yeah, try, impose, see what's going to happen, you know? It's not like this anymore. And indeed, we live in the tightly interconnected world. And information travels extremely fast. That is why, for example, mainstream media, they are losing audiences that fast. And United States, it's up to United States to decide if it's going to be, if it wants to be one of the three major or superpowers globally, or it's going to stop being one at all. In fact, it's after that we have to look at attentively if United States can sustain itself as the unified country. It is the torn country as we speak now. So there is a whole basically strata of the population. They are just nut jobs, woke nut jobs with their brainwashed into their basically culturally and socially suicidal and homicidal ideologies. Europe is already done. It's not going to recover. So, and if United States wants to follow this way, what can we do? We can only elect what we have as we, I went out and voted for Trump. Not because I like him, but because it was the lesser of the two evils. Simple as that.
Andre, since Donald Trump took power, we had two sort of voices, two different voices toward the conflict in Ukraine, one coming from the United States, the other one coming from the European countries. And as time went by, and we have, I was believing that the Europeans going to be, going to get closer to the Trump sort of point of view. But you see Donald Trump is getting closer to them. And it's so amazing to me that today we've learned that the U.S. Treasury Department has announced new sanctions on four Russian individuals and three companies. Why do you need to do that? Why is that?
It's exceptionalism, narcissism, and in a sense, it's, you know, tantrum. The policies of the Western, listen, we look at the, we are looking at the millennium to half millennium scale once in this 1,000 years to 500 years event. It's the decline of the West. It's being defeated. It's being it was already defeated thoroughly on the battlefield. And now we're looking at the Eurasian land mass and the shifting of the major, you know, economic, so to speak, fulcrum, if you wish, focal point there. I mean, people still do not understand. Well, that's what I'm, and because they're brainwashed. I mean, basically, the education from some kind of the Harvard or Ivy League or Oxford, you know, humanities, you know, department like political science or economics, it's garbage essentially. And so I repeat it all the time, put France and Germany together, they still are dwarfed economically by Russia. And then you have now the last one, United Kingdom, you know probably that they will lose the last smelting, metallurgical plant. And they're still G7. How the hell this third world country is in G7, great seven? Economically, they are midgets. They still can produce, you know, once in a while some nuclear power submarine out of the former resources, you know. But when you look at that, this is the country which doesn't have its own metallurgical industry. And this is considered the first world country. Have you seen around what is happening around London, let alone in the other British cities? It's just horrible, I mean, you know. So, and when you look at this, that is why they were doing. They're lashing out. They're throwing tantrum. And when you look at the level of the maturity of the those elites, they are kindergarten. They are evil, many of them, but they are stupid. Look at Annalena Baerbock or Scholz or Starmer. They are downright stupid. Those people are not fit to run anything. They won't be able to run the paid public restroom, let alone run the country. And they, well, look at United Kingdom. Look at Germany. So France, oh, good Lord. You know what happened in France now, right? Europe is becoming the totalitarian concentration camp. It will become. and it will be poor. It's already becoming poor. And yeah, democracy, right? Don't even use this word, okay? So it would have 1984 going on. And this is the result of the historical loss, inability to adapt, inability to develop itself, and lack of resources. Europe doesn't have any resources. They don't. They have some minor deposits of some ores or coal, but in terms of real energy, which can sustain development, they have none. So, and there you go.
Do you think that the case of Le Pen in France is related to the war in Ukraine and the way that, because she didn't say anything about that, she's gonna.
Oh no, she talked about Russian aggression and all that. No, it's related. Well, yeah, to a degree, it's related to the process which is ongoing. Macron is going to lose France. I don't think it will exist even as the unified nation past the 2050. It's already, you can take a look what is happening in Saint-Denis, for example, and, you know, this Banlieues and Marseille. And there is the video now how they basically beat police. Police are just impotent. They are impotent, all of them. And same goes to United Kingdom. They are European nations as such, as the ethnic groups, they are threatened. And so are their political realms. As I'm not sure that, as I already stated, France probably not going to exist past, as the unified state, past 2050. And about UK, I don't know. You know, so who knows? It's all in the process of disintegration, and the tragedy of Europe is that there is no way out of it. They might go to full-blown totalitarian and fascist. They might try to do it. And again, many people do not understand what fascism is. They still, you know, think Mussolini or even Hitler. But reality is you could be liberal fascist like Macron. You know, you can be fascist and you still impose the, you know, the most ridiculous social ideologies there. And yeah, they may try to, you know, do what they do for centuries upon centuries, go west, east. They already tried, sort of, you know, through Ukraine. But then they tried go themselves, they will be turned in the parking lot, and that will be the end of it, you know. So goes for the United States. But United States lost its war already anyway. So, and that's the death of the West as we knew it. And it's over. They committed suicide essentially over through the 20th century, you know, and especially with the Second World War. And they never learned anything. They produced this degenerate intellectual elite, which was pursuing very much non-traditional ways of changing the Europe. And here's the result. That's the final result. And again, don't forget, we are humans. We live between what, 62, maybe 80 years? And obviously nations live longer than that. So, but the speed with which I, for example, 62, I saw this change in the world is astonishing. It's mind-boggling. Okay, I observed the collapse. I lived it. Collapse of the Soviet Union. Now I'm living in the what would be technically West. And I see the collapse of the combined West from the inside. It's just absolutely fascinating. And it's sad in a way, you know, that not everything is bad or was bad about the West. But again, if you look at the 20th century and this political upheaval, these are now nuclear weapons which only keep us from unleashing the World War III in a full-blown conventional way. Simple as that. And of course, new technological developments and things like that. If not for that, we would have been at war again. And the West would have been marching to Russia to get resources, which they need. They need them desperately. But the problem for them is Russia's weapons and armed forces are such that they will be annihilated even when they think about it.
Russian president has announced that Xi Jinping gonna be in Russia for the Victory Day on May 9th. And yeah. Andre, we have a sort of communication between Russia and China. that doesn't exist between the United States and Iran. Even with Donald Trump, he was just, I'm going to change everything. I'm going to make, I'm going to put an end to the conflict in Ukraine. Russia should be our friend and we don't have anything against them. But nothing is happening, Andre. Do you, if the United States misses this opportunity that they, I believe that they still have it under the Trump administration to make a better relationship with Russia.
Yeah, they still do.
And you look at Russia and China. What's missing in between Russia and the United States? The most important factor that is missing is what's that?
United States emerged as a superpower. I mean, it was always obviously a very developed country in the beginning of the 20th century. It was industrial superpower. It wasn't military superpower. It was a great navy. Its army was the 12th in the world, actually, by the size. And they were running the military exercises with the trucks, with the tanks painted on them, or just, you know, the cardboard things. And so they became superpower because of the Soviet Union. Because the Soviet Union did the heavy lifting and defeated the Nazi creme de la creme. Not only Nazi, European. It was European invasion, just headed by Hitler, and there were Romanian, Italian, Hungarian, you know, armies, or, you know, SS divisions from, I mean, it was Europe, okay? And Russians defeated it. And the United States, as it was in the case with the First World War, they came in the to the very end, but they obviously shared, deservedly so, the victory, common victory. And as a result, the whole world was in ruins. And by the end of that time, United States, by 1946, it was the country which was responsible for the 50% of the world's output. Can you imagine the Soviet Union was completely destroyed, you know? And they thought we had the, you know, rulers of the world. They started to lie about how they defeated Hitler, of course, you know, and a small help from those, you know, 27 million dead Russians. But yeah, we are the greatest. And in some sense, it was. The problem was that then instead of, you know, enjoying this moment and incredible prosperity, make no mistake, incredible prosperity, which happened after the World War II and all those great American projects, they decided that, yeah, we can do whatever we want. Then, of course, there is Korea. Granted, it wasn't the United States who started the war. It was the North Korea which started the war on the Korean Peninsula. United States gets involved there. Cannot win. Okay? Something counter MiG-15s. Oh, my God. Then, of course, comes 57, Sputnik. Those, you know, subhuman peasants, you know, Slavic peasants in Russia. How dare they are, you know? This is what it is. That's what was this all about. How dare they are to do this? You know, we are supposed to be this. How dare they are to challenge us that we didn't win the Hitler? We were just basically important, but the second fiddle, you know? And it's like, then Gagarin flies. Then suddenly Soviet Union gets a decent, you know, standard of living and the best public education in the world. But they were like, this cannot be happening. It's supposed to be us. So, yeah, there was a prosperity. United States wasn't touched by war. That's why United States doesn't know what war is. And as a result, they have this, you know, especially considering the fanatical type of the, you know, rupture type, you know, fanatical evangelicals, who say, oh, my God, Soviet Union collapses. We did it. You know, we finally won it. They had very little to do with the actual collapse of the Soviet Union, but whatever. And suddenly again, you know, they were supposed to, you know what, these Russians, they have to get the hell out of our, you know what, messianic ways. Now you have these Russians come back and they're looking and say, your army, it's a joke. You know, the Russians don't say it's a joke, it's still capable army, but they say, you want to try the real war, and they give them the taste. And now they suddenly see this, what's left? This is the kindergarten level of maturity. They are incapable. First, make no mistake, I will repeat it again. Majority of the American elite is highly uncultured. it is highly uncommon. Well, they think that, for example, if they drink a very expensive scotch and they can even recite some French poetry, that it means it being cultured. It's not. Being cultured is a completely different story. They, you know, mix it with the, some refinement, you know. And as a result, we have this. And Russia is in the, you know, this famous, you know, Marsha is a Brady Bunch, you know. And the question here is that they hate Russians because they are always in the way of the messianic way of the shining city on the hill. Now they are not. They can see it, and they know that Russia played a huge role in all that, you know, including taking some things which they, for some reason, think that America was supposed to have, you know, but they did. And they do not even understand that America's value for the world and the great things Americans accomplished, like outstanding industrial genius, okay, engineering genius, you know, things of this nature, they should have concentrated on that, you know, and their own prosperity and giving the new ideas to the world. They decided that for some reason they are better than anybody else in warfare, which they are not by a mile. And as the result, all resources are squandered. And we have to remember 1971, September, Nixon shock. Nixon gets off their golden standard. He kills the Bretton Woods. And you know why he does this? Everybody says, oh, yeah, there were some kind of balances and things like that. No, because United States, which at that time in 1971, adjusted for the time, was an industrial monster. It already couldn't sustain the war in Vietnam, which compared to the special military operation is a stroll in the park. So that already gives you a hint. Well, now United States squandered all of its national treasure on the stupid wars with their, actually, they couldn't even defeat them. You know, they couldn't defeat Taliban, for crying out loud. And what do we have now? We have 34 trillion national debt. Do you know what we have by 2027 by Congressional Budget Office? The payments on the interest for the military expenditure in the United States will be much larger than the expenditure itself. How do you think it's going to happen now that the United States wants to compete with their advanced weapon systems with Russia, for example? They can't. You just can't, because it's like the, you know, the stranglehold. The more you try to, you know, free yourself from this, the tighter it gets you. And this is the result of the American elites and how they have been brought up, how they have been educated, because most of them, not all, are children and morons. They thought that they credentialed having their some PhD from Harvard means H.L. Mencken. Morons with PhDs, that's who most of the American elite is, and especially the military one. They have magnificent victories over Grenada and Panama. In Grenada, they awarded more people than took part in this operation. So, you know, what can I say? And that's the result. That's the historical thing. That's the historical, so to speak, you know, nexus at which we are. And obviously, they cannot live with the fact that Asia, in the sense that, you know, if you look attentively at the Eurasia, without this peninsula of the stinky, you know, European governments, suddenly becomes the leader in so many fields, you know. So, and they know militarily they cannot compete with Russia. I can guarantee you that. There are a number of things which I wrote 4 books about it. Economically, China's economy is a monster. Again, it's such a monster that it's difficult to even explain. And they still, the only thing they can do about, whatever they can do about it, is of course, yeah, some kind of military, you know, things. And again, they cannot fight continental warfare. They cannot land troops to fight China. They will be smashed by sheer volume of China. Chinese have 25 million ready, immediate, you know, mobilization reserve. And they can all arm them and supply them. And the only thing is what? To bomb something. So to show that we matter. And okay, let's go and do the, obviously from Israel's, you know, so to speak, with Israel's guidance, let's go and bomb Iran. Could they? Probably. But we don't know yet.
Andre, it's so amazing you mentioned China. And when we compare it to the United States, even under the Trump administration, you see Donald Trump in terms of the conflict, he's just getting more aggressive day by day. And in terms of the economy, he's just putting more tariff sanctions on other countries. On the other hand, you see China, we had the first, it's huge. We had the first meeting, China, Japan, and South Korea, first economic dialogue. This is huge.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Gigantic.
And it's totally missing in the mindset of
average American political and especially media, they are morons again. And I mean it. They do not understand what is happening. They don't have the toolkit. Those few who have, they either in the, at best, advisory role, or for the most part, they're not even allowed in the top of this whole mess. Yeah, it is huge. And you know that China now limits its investment into the United States officially since today. And the whole world just moves on, you know, it operates. And these guys in Washington, D.C. sit in their bubble. They have no clue about anything. And Trump says that, yeah, he wants tariff everybody. Okay, sure, yeah. He now wants to secondary tariffs on Russian oil. And he wants to fight the Russian shadow fleet. Sure, Russians will just cut their production. That will absolutely shoot up the prices of oil up. Apart from the fact Russians have that thing called the Russian Navy, which can do the escort operations. So you look at this like, what the hell, man? It's just continuation of the Biden, but with more flair, more BS, you know, more colorful BS, much better looking and much smarter the press secretary in the White House, Caroline Leavitt, you know. So, and but other than that, same thing, you know, you just cannot change it. The more things change, the more they stay the same. And that is why you cannot talk, you cannot negotiate with the United States. It's useless, I mean. No matter who comes, they will come and will shake your hand, and then you turn around, they will stab you in the back. That's what it is. So they will smile, they will be nicer than those, you know, losers from, you know, like Sullivan or Blinken and these fanatics. So, yeah, it's a sad state of the affairs, but it is what it is now.
Yeah. It's tragic, by the way.
It is tragic. I love the United States. I lived here for more than 30 years. This country became our home when the Soviet Union... it's difficult to explain what it was. It was the Civil War, essentially, and especially where we were coming from. So we kind of, you know, pledged our, you know, life, essentially, for this country, not because it was just nice. And our life initially wasn't very easy at all, to put it mildly, you know. So, but we treasured what we saw. And then it started to change. Now, after 9/11, everything went down, completely downhill. Although I would say that it was Clinton administration which already laid down the foundation for what we are observing today. And after that, take a look at 9/11 tragedy and what happened after that, and here we are today. It is absolute mess for the last 25 years, and it was increasing more and more and more until it hit absolutely overdrive with Obama administration in 2008, financial crisis, and the whole thing, including the personal liberties, there, you know, those things which are threatened, which is America's greatest end, Bill of Rights, they were just being dissolved. And you look at this, and who knows if Trump will be able somehow to at least address this domestically. But again, many people do not understand. American domestic politics is tightly tied today to the outside world. This is what they do not understand. you know, and they do not understand. The same as it was in the World War II in many senses, that what is happening now somewhere around Donetsk or Kharkiv has a direct bearing on so many things in the United States. These people in Washington, most of them, they don't understand this. They don't have toolkit.
Thank you so much, Andrei, for being with us today. Great pleasure, as always.
Bye-bye.
Take care, Andrei. Bye-bye.